not. What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
Hello, and welcome to episode 186 of Public Interest Podcast with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. We're here today with Rashern Baker, Prince George's County Executive in Prince George's County, Maryland. He's a Democrat, first elected in 2010, currently serving in his second term. County Executive Baker is a former delegate representing District 22B in Prince George's County from 1994 to 2003. He's a former five-time delegate to the Democratic National Party Convention in 2000, 04, 08, 12, and 16. He's a former executive director of Community Teachers Institute, a former senior law partner at Baker & Perry, and a former captain in the United States Army Reserve's Judge Advocate General Corps. County Executive Baker, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
I'm doing good, Jordan. Thank you for having me.
Excellent. The first question I'd like to pose to you is, what are you currently doing, or what have you ever done, to advance the public interest, and why?
Well, I'm currently the county executive of Prince George's County, the second largest jurisdiction in the state of Maryland, and I hope that I'm always advancing the public interest. But I have to say, it didn't start with being elected. You know, my wife, who also, advanced the public interest, used to tell me that, sweetheart, you don't need to be elected to change the world. But at my current job, you know, I try to make it better for the residents of Prince George's County and the state of Maryland.
So you have your political mentor, if I'm right, is Wayne Curry, a former Prince George's County executive. How is it that you came to meet him? Obviously, were you in elected office when you met him, and how did he inspire you to follow in his footsteps?
Well, no, I wasn't in elective office. And in fact, Wayne Curry was running for county executive at the same time I was having my first run for the House of Delegates. And my wife and I met Mr. Curry as young lawyers who had moved out to Prince George's County. And he was very active in the Bar Association. He was a leader in the community. And we got to know him. But it was really how he got to be my mentor was really my wife's idea. When I got elected, my wife said that, you need somebody to help mold you to do the things you want to do in the state of Maryland. And I think Wayne Curry would be a good person.
And, but you don't just walk up to a county executive and say, hey, let's get a beer, buddy.
Yeah, you know, so Jordan, I was young like you, and so that's exactly what I did. I walked up to the brand new county executive and said, pretty much that, hey, let's get a beer, and I'd like for you to mentor me. Now, of course, I didn't know that meant that he was going to haze me.
Oh, yeah?
But I was very lucky in my political life that I had some really great people who helped shape it. Wayne Curry was the most significant of those. Mm-hmm. But certainly when I ran in 22B, mm-hmm. Senator Paul Pinsky, mm-hmm. He was the senator, and he embraced me and put me on his ticket. But he also was somebody whose belief never changed. He's an extremely progressive Democrat.
Is that a virtue?
It is. It can hurt you in the sense of trying to get things done, but it is in a sense that when you have young folks who, like I was, I always knew where he stood in terms of Paul Pinsky, and so it helped me make sure I never went, too far astray from my core beliefs.
Now, County Executive Baker, mm-hmm. on that topic, mm-hmm. Sometimes though, perhaps you would agree. If a situation on the ground changes, it may be necessary to adapt your principles to that change. I'll just mention that you were against gambling as a delegate
right.
in the 90s, but when the state moved
right.
to a different direction and you saw there's nothing you could do about it, and you were county executive, did you not change your stance on that principle?
I certainly did, and that's the important things about getting things done, that you grow into the positions, and that's why someone like Wayne Curry and Pete Rollins, who was the chair of appropriations, were important role models. But what they taught me was that you evolved if you want to change and help the people that you serve.
How might Pete Rollins or Wayne Curry have reacted to that revelation that you changed positions on something that you once felt so strongly about?
Well, if Pete, who unfortunately passed away before I became county executive, if he would have saw that I had changed my position, he would have said, finally, you're listening to me, Baker. Because he was an advocate, because what Pete taught me as chair of appropriation is, one, how to get things done. How to get legislation through the General Assembly.
What's something he taught you?
The main thing was, what he taught me was, I wanted to change the school system in Prince George's County. I wanted us to, you know, we're a wealthy county, we're an educated county, and yet our school system still lags, you know, especially at that time, was lagging at the bottom. And as a legislator, I wanted to change that. Mm-hmm. But I could never get anything passed through. One, because I was, you know, very dogmatic in my beliefs. Mm-hmm. And what Pete taught me was how to work with other people, how to bring people to your side, and more importantly, how to understand the process of getting legislation through both chambers and get it signed.
Could it have been something out of your control? For instance, being a freshman delegate in your first term, you don't have much political capital, so who's going to listen to you anyway?
Yeah, and then, but you know what? That was both the detriment, and you know, no, we don't have a long time to talk about. But the fun of being, you know, a delegate is that that since you don't have much political capital and no one really listens to you, you can say whatever the heck you want,
and no one's listening.
And that's right, you're just throwing bombs. What he taught me was it had nothing to do with being a freshman; it had everything to do with understanding where you had to go to get the help. And what Pete offered me, and quite honestly, the reason I ended up getting to know Pete Rollins was because Wayne Kirby was my mentor. And Wayne came as county executive and said, Baker, I want you to go to appropriation, and this is the guy you need to know. He's powerful. He's the chair of appropriation.
And was that Cass Taylor, speaker at the time?
Cass Taylor was the speaker at the time.
And so he listened to you?
And
you said, because a lot of freshmen, they say, oh, I'd like to be in this committee. He says, that's all well and good, but you're going to the other one.
Oh, no. Cass Taylor and Pete Rollins would never listen to me in my freshman year. But they would listen to Wayne Curry, who was a county executive of Prince George's County.
Why did Wayne take such a liking to you? Did he have other mentees?
He did. Not many. Not many.
It was like a small farm system.
It was a really small farm system. And it was, it's a good question. I don't know why. I mean, I think what...
Did he see a lot of himself in you, personality-wise?
I think later on, that's what I learned, is he did see a lot of me. And we are a lot alike. You know, our approach to things, as my chief of staff reminds me, because she was Wayne Curry's chief of staff, is that our approach is different, but what we want in the end is about the same. And I think what Wayne saw is a younger, probably less polished version of himself who was a lot more diplomatic than Wayne. Wayne always reminds me of Theodore Roosevelt, not just because they looked alike, but just their... You know, they were a force of nature. But for me, he was always saying, you know, this is Wayne. Wayne would always say to me, he said, in directing me. And sometimes I would resist, like going to appropriations. I didn't like the chair at the time, who was Pete Rollins. He and I didn't get along. I didn't want to go. And Wayne was saying, I've already talked to the Speaker of the House. He's going to put you on this committee because it's the best thing for Prince George's County, and it's going to help you. I need you to get to know Pete Rollins. And he set up the meeting so Pete and I could get to know each other.
So what you mentioned, that you and County Executive Curry have slightly different approaches, still trying to get to the same end. Could you describe in some detail a little bit about what your approach is?
So my approach is, and it's really in style more so than even approach.
We're both, is it personality or style or what is
it? It's style.
Okay.
It's style. I mean, mine is more of, I smile a lot.
Mm-hmm. So does that help get things done?
It does. It's just
honey more than vinegar.
Yeah, it's and he was more vinegar.
Was he successful and effective?
Yes, he was successful. Yes, he was. Because what he was extremely bright. He was successful at getting the things done that he wanted to get done.
Now, you've been incredibly successful as county executive. In fact, under your leadership in the last 7 years since you were elected to be county executive, you've seen Prince George's County go off the charts in terms of progress. You have crime rate decreasing by 55% since 2010. You have the home price of homes increased, property values increasing 61%. graduation rates increase 10%, scandal-free coming off a Jack Johnson predecessor. Then you have business investment. You have Kaiser Permanente, Whole Foods, $12 billion of development. You have this casino at National Harbor, which is also a hotel and conference center, a whole entertainment center. Those are accomplishments. Well, first of all, to what extent can we attribute those to your leadership? And, you know, with the smile, the honey versus vinegar, was Wayne Curry able to say the same thing about his accomplishments during his time in office?
You know what? There were different times, but I will say this. We were able to accomplish those because I did have a mentor like Wayne Curry. And that is, when I became county executive, and it was after the scandals that had happened here, businesses wouldn't invest. Wayne Curry basically spent the first 6 months of my administration in my office not making money for his family or for himself.
You mean as county, when you were county
when
executive?
When I became county executive, Wayne Curry would come to my office at least 3 times a week, and he would sit in there and he would go over and try and pour everything that he had learned and mistakes he had made as county executive, and basically give me a tutorial of, here are the things you have to do. Here's what, if you want to be successful, and I'll give you a quick example. The first bill I put in as county executive was an ethics bill to completely change the way to reform ethics in the county. And I went to the state. I didn't go to the county legislative body at the county council.
So as county executive, you went back to your old colleagues in the Maryland General Assembly.
And I said, I want you to pass legislation at the state level that will regulate how people can raise funds in the county, how we prosecute people who violate it, to make abundantly clear to the state. But it was Wayne who convinced me that you can do that on your own, but there are 9 members of a legislative body that vote on your budget that you're going to make mad. You need to bring them along with you. They're not going to like it because it also impacted their ability to raise money. And, you know, that was an important lesson because I didn't understand at the time how important it was going to be for me to have a good working relationship to pass some of the very controversial and legislation we would need to turn around the economy.
So we're sitting in 2010. You're under the tutelage of a former county executive, and you're saying, well, you know, okay, I've learned the lesson. I cannot take unilateral executive action.
Right.
But I still have an agenda. There's so much I want to get done. How do you get it done?
With your enthusiasm. That's the way I was. You're eager and bubbling. I was like, I have all these ideas.
How do you bring people along?
So what he taught me was, one, you got to get them to buy into your ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Not just go down there and present it like I thought I was going to do, which is, here's what I want to do. Go ahead and follow. I had to go just like when I was in a legislative body. So it was a good thing I served as a legislator. I understood that, you know what, I needed a coalition. So the first things is we have rotating chairs of our county council.
Mm-hmm.
It was new for me, you know, in the legislative body, we have permanent chairs. But with Wayne's help, we set up dinners. I would actually, it felt like we were like Jefferson and Madison and Hamilton setting up these dinners. But we'd have small, intimate dinners, mm-hmm, and talk about how we move Prince George's County forward.
They
had more agency, and they could help shape the legislation. So after the ethics reform, which they didn't like, and you know, not to a person, they thought it was unnecessary.
The second time, for our listeners who aren't familiar with Maryland politics, former guest on Public Interest Podcast, Governor Hughes in the 1970s, coming off the heels of a Marvin Mandel administration, Spiro Agnew, former county executive, vice president of the United States, you know, ethical issues. So in the early 1980s, late 1970s, Maryland had a whole bunch of ethical problems. Now we're coming back in 2010. That's 30 years later, and we're encountering this again.
You're right. And so but in order to move forward, you have to send a signal to everybody that you take this seriously and you're going to do everything before something happens. You know, it wasn't enough, as I said to the county council, it wasn't enough for us to all say we're new. Because there were 5 new members on the county council. They said, well, listen, we're new. We haven't done anything wrong. And the person that was being led away to jail was the county executive. I said, yes, but they look at the county as a whole. So that wasn't something they were keen on. But what I did was with these dinners was that we brought the council along. We talked about our economic development incentive fund,
mm-hmm,
where at the time there was a recession. The market had crashed. Prince George's County, when I took over, had a $77 million budget deficit. Mm-hmm. I was suggesting to the 9 members of the council that I wanted to take $50 million out of our rainy day fund and spend it on incentivizing businesses to come. That was difficult for them. They were like, we got this budget deficit, and you're talking about taking money and putting it to incentivize businesses to come. How do we know it's going to work? And I said to them, I know it's going to work. Mm-hmm. If we do this, and where we are now, businesses weren't coming.
So on the topic of business development, a lot of what the county council does, and obviously what the county executive would have jurisdiction over as well, is zoning. Right? And there's a sense with developers who are greatly impacted by zoning regulations. Could you speak to an idea? Is there such a thing, or has there ever been in Prince George's such a thing as pay to play, meaning that developers would need to make campaign contributions to council members in order to get the sort of decisions they want on the zoning regulations from the council?
Exactly. And that is what had happened in the past. And that's why the ethics reform was so important and why many council members didn't like it. And that was basically where council members and county executives raise their money. And then not just Prince George's County, but throughout the state of Maryland, they raise their money from developers. My legislation took that ability away. No longer could you go to developers and raise campaign contributions if you were voting on projects that they had.
So does that mean you'd have to recuse yourself from it, or you just wouldn't be able to accept the cash?
That means you would not be able to accept it. Any donation from anybody that had a project going on in Prince George's County. So those people, they raise all their money to win their election, could no longer give them money. It also meant that as county executive, I probably raised about $1 million for the last race for county executive. Mm-hmm. It meant that I couldn't go back to those people I raised the money from. And that right there, if you think about elected officials, you know, that's your bread and butter. You're raising money. So that's why that ethics bill was so controversial. It took away that.
Now, sometimes individuals, we've already spoken about perception earlier versus actual reality on the ground. Perception is that if a developer is giving a council member money and a council member votes in favor of that development project, right, the reason that the council member is voting in favor is because a developer paid them. Right. Now, when you remove the campaign contributions to the council members, did you see any change in the vote structure? Did any development find it less likely to get passed, or was it actually the same and they had been voting in the public interest all along?
I think for the most part, everybody had been voting in the public interest. But here's the difference. Here's why.
Optics mostly?
Well, it was optics, and there was corruption. People did go to jail. Mm-hmm. So there was corruption, and not just at the executive level. In the past, council members had gone to jail for this very thing. Mm-hmm. But it became more important. Thank you. It became more important because the perception of businesses where they could not get a fair deal, you know, in Prince George's County. And so they wouldn't do business here. They wouldn't come.
Interesting.
So what
so
we had to do
creating a level playing field brought that development. You got $12 billion of development. People felt like it was more of a safe place to invest in.
Yes. They felt like, you know, the excuse that I'm not going to do business, and I heard this when I was campaigning, I'm not doing business in Prince George's County because you can't get a fair deal unless you're willing to pay somebody. Well, that was gone because you no longer could a council member. You moved the obstacle right away.
So what was Wayne Curry's reaction, first of all, when you became county executive? Because let's not forget, this wasn't first strike. This was your third swing, right? You know, you ran, so you're delegate in the 1990s. You take a break. You're doing some education with the Community Teachers Initiative. All right, doing some Army Reserve, public service. We're going to be an attorney, just work in a private firm. And then we're going to take a swing. We're going to make a crack. Let's be county executive. Oh, you know what? That didn't work out. All right, let's try it again. You know, everyone loses their first time. Boom, lost the second time. How do you look at your wife, your supporters, and say, you know, it's the third time that it's going to work? How did you actually? And then it did. What was Curry's reaction the third time? But also, like, how did you even have the chutzpah after the second time to say, I got to do this a third time?
You know, I love your question because it takes me back. So let me see if I can answer this very in succinct way. So when I left the legislative body to run for county executive, which was a big, big uphill battle, and I knew it, My wife was concerned because my wife knew that the only thing I had ever wanted to do since I was 17 years old was to go into public service. I finally won an office.
Through elected office. We already covered earlier, you don't need to be elected to change the world and do public service.
That's right.
So you wanted to be an elected official since you were a teenager.
I wanted to be an elected official. And she knew that, and she knew that that was how, you know, my whole shape of my being and where I went and what I did and studied in school. And I get there, and I'm actually good at it. And for her, she went and said, you know, she said to me, she said, well, I'm not sure if you should take this chance because there are better known candidates out there. But I felt deeply that I wanted to go into elective office so I could change and make people's lives better, not just so I could hold on to the office. And to me, the place that that had the greatest challenge was at the county level. Mm-hmm. So I run, I lose. My wife is worried that I'm going to go insane. So she makes me get a job around, you know, she said, get a job. You can get a job as long, you know, because we had three children. And she said, you know, this is your chance to go out there and explore from the non-elected side, you know, what it is you want to do. You talk about education. That's when I went to community teachers. And learning about how education was done differently, community teachers allowed me to go around the nation and look at different education around there and what we could do differently in Prince George's County. So I come back and I said, you know, Jack Johnson is the county executive. I don't like the direction the county is going in. Mm-hmm. I felt strongly about the things that we needed to change. And my wife said, okay, well, if you feel strongly, you should run. I ran. I lost in a race that everybody predicted I would get blown away. You know, we were down 31. It was closer. Wayne Curry was right there with me. We lost really in the last minutes of the election, and we lost by 4 percentage points. It was devastating because I lost. And, you know, to make matters worse, I was up. A Senate seat opened up. In fact, the Senate seat that they had, state Senate seat, they had asked me to run for. And not following my wife's advice, she said, well, if you wanted to be a state senator, you could have had that 8 years ago. Why would you take it now? So I went to go try and get an appointment for a state Senate seat when the senator there lost. I didn't really want to be a state senator, but people were pushing me. Jack Johnson blocked it, so I didn't get it. So not only was I a two-time loser at county executive, I just lost an appointment to a state Senate seat.
And then you figure, oh, there's no better time than the present to run for a third time.
No, actually, what I said was, I mean,
must have been serious soul searching.
It really was. I was saying, you know, because you put your family through it. You started with the right part of the question is, what do you say to your family? My kids, especially my daughters, only knew me running for office or being in office. And I didn't think I could put my family through it again. But it was my wife who once again said to me, she said, nope, you came very close. That's what you want to do. She said to me, and I repeated this a lot during the election. She said, sweetie, I don't care if you serve, you know, a day or 4 years, but you're going to be county executive because all I need to do is make sure that you put your hand on the Bible and you're sworn in. If you want to quit the next day, you can. But I'm not going to go through life with you wondering what would have happened if you had run, if you didn't run.
And with these kinds of accomplishments, Prince George's County is very happy that you ran a third time, I'm sure. Yeah. So as we approach the end of this podcast, I'd like to wrap it up with a final question. Of course, this episode is going live during the Democratic gubernatorial candidate week for Public Interest Podcast. There's much speculation about who will be running to face Hogan in the 2018 election, who's Maryland's Republican governor. And of course, you did appear in the Western Maryland Democratic Party summit with your name on a ballot as a potential candidate for governor. Could you speak to the people of Maryland about why it is that public service has been so important to you, what you hope your legacy will be at the end of the day, regardless of whether you ever become Maryland's governor or not? What is it that drove you, and what is it that you will leave behind, Mr. Baker?
I think the thing that drove me is where we get to. And I'll try and do this in the short version. And that is, you know, it's basically my life story. You know, I grew up in the military, so I, you know, my dad moved around every 2 years. I was not a very good student. I failed the first and second grade.
I didn't know you could fail elementary school.
You can. I proved it. You know, because I had difficult reading. So what it means is that when you're moving every 2 years, you're going into places where you're always older than your peers. Just think about that. You start from, it's the first and second grade. So you're like from behind in the beginning. And so I got into a lot of trouble, mostly around fighting. And but the story is not that I got into trouble or that I struggled with reading. The story really was that my parents, and especially my father, never doubted that his son would go to college and that he would achieve. And he started saving very early, even though he didn't have a college education. And my mom didn't have a college education. He had a high school education. But they knew their children would have a better life, and they prepared for it. And for 17 years of my life, you know, I just took that for granted, that that's how everybody in the world lived, that they lived their way where their parents took care of them, that they undergirded them, that there was always a safety net. It wasn't until we came back to the States that a teacher held me responsible for actually getting my assignments done and made me read this book that I chose. I mean, it gave me a choice between two books, Wuthering Heights and Black Boy. And I chose Black Boy, and it changed my perception of what reality for other people were like. That book by Richard Wright made me realize that I was blessed to be born to the parents I was born in. Had I been born with any other parents, or a single mom, or a single dad, or somebody who just wasn't there to always catch you, my life could have been completely different. And it made me feel ashamed. And it also made me want to do something to give other people the same opportunities that I got, as Tony Blair likes to say in one of his speeches, to give the other people by right what I got by good fortune or good blessing. That's what drove me into wanting to run for office. It wasn't that I wanted to be a politician. I wanted to change people's life for the better. That's why being county executive is so important. And that's why if I run for governor, it's about the ability that I think I could take the time and talent that I have to make people's lives better.
That has been Rushurn Baker, Prince George's County Executive in Maryland, former delegate to the Democratic Party National Convention, Executive Director at Community Teachers Institute, former law partner, captain in the U.S. Army Reserves, JAG program, who speaks fundamentally about four basic principles: smile, service, faith, and family. He speaks about recognizing that to whom much is given, much is expected. He advises Marylanders and all listeners to follow your dreams because he provides himself as an example. Even leaders take hard blows and can get up and succeed. You can fail first grade and have difficulty reading. You can get into fights in school. And that boy, if you have faith in him, and if he has faith in himself, will grow up, go to college, and even if, despite a few losses on the campaign trail, could end up making life better for a million residents in one of the most successful stories of a county in the United States in the second decade of the 21st century. So, County Executive Baker, I'd like to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, George, for having me.
And this has been episode 186 of Public Interest Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. This has been another episode of Public Interest Podcast with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. I'll remind you to subscribe on publicinterestpodcast.com and on iTunes. Leave a review of this podcast on iTunes and listen on Stitcher, SoundCloud, CastBox, Blueberry, Player FM, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube. Should you wish to comment on this episode, you're welcome to leave a voicemail at 240-630-0380. And the first 3 minutes of that voicemail may be played in future episodes of Public Interest Podcast. Should you wish to support the podcast, you're welcome to leave a contribution in an amount that you feel comfortable with at publicinterestpodcast.com. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.